7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 47 of Color Magic. I am your host, Daquan Watson. And as always, I've got my good friend Brian Allen with me today. How you doing, Brian?
Doing pretty good. Getting everything. Things are going along swimmingly, gotta say.
Yeah, so anything major break or surprise you about your house yet?
I think the continuing war against the geckos, because every time my wife or somebody kills one, she's like, "Woo, that's over with." No, it's not over.
You could freak her out and tell her they're like hydras. When you kill one, they grow another head and more show up.
Basically.
But yeah, this week we have a lot to cover on the show. This last week was just stocked with news, game related stuff, magic stuff, new previews for a new set, like magic news for next year.
Yeah.
Deaths that happened in the public. Like, there's just so many things. So we're going to try to get through as much as we can this week. If there's topics we don't cover that y'all felt we should have this week, we are apologizing up front, because there's just been a pile of stuff. And we just, if we didn't want this to be like a 2.5 hour show, we kind of had to just make cuts somewhere. So let's go ahead and say thank you right off the bat to those of you that have joined and supported our Patreon. That is super awesome. We're always super thankful. This week we had several new people come on board. I want to thank all of them. So I want to say thank you to Andrew, Lisette, and Sven. A name that I'm going to obliterate here, and I'm apologizing. But I'm assuming it's like Mike Krzyzewski, you know, the coach whose name has like one vowel in it. So I'm going to go with Steve Shabilsky. It might be wrong. Feel free to hop on our Discord and give me the correct pronunciation there. Adrian Carr, seventh guest, and David Ray. Thank you all for joining our Patreon list. So awesome. I will be getting invites out to you all for the Discord very shortly. And I will be getting the postcards in the mail this week, which we'll cover why as we go through the show, has been supremely busy. So I have not been able to get that stuff out, but we didn't forget about you. Just want to let you all know. And we want to remind everybody about our sponsor, cardsphere.com, which really is the best way to be able to buy and sell cards from your collection that is collecting dust sitting around, that you want to get more than buy list prices from other online stores. You maybe don't want the hassle of eBay. You can just put yourself up at the price you want to sell it for and look for cards at the price you want to buy them for, and then it just pairs you up. It's nice and easy. And now you can put money on and off with PayPal. So it's super convenient now. So if you haven't, go give them a look at cardsphere.com. They are some good people. And today I want to hop right into the soapbox. And I'm not going to be funny and silly. I'm not going to have the rabble-rousing crowd, because I don't think it's fitting. But I want to take a moment to talk about the death of Chadwick Boseman. For those of you who don't know who he is, I don't know how you wouldn't know. As his, I guess, tribute tweets that they put up is now the most shared tweet on Twitter in less than a week. I believe it was something like, it was some big number, because I'm going to say in the first few minutes it did like 5.7 million, and at some point it went over and like started clicking tens of millions like immediately. But he was the actor that portrayed Black Panther. And normally, I'm not one to really be bothered by celebrity deaths. You know, I kind of just look at their people. You know, they're not people I know. They're people that just have entertained me for parts of my life. But this particular one's a little bit different. You know, first off, because he wasn't even as old as I am. And I think that's already a thing you think about. Like, man, this randomly took a dude who was supremely talented. He was at the top of his game. His career was really taking off. And, you know, cancer got him. The other thing, really, I think, is looking back and realizing he had filmed 5-6 movies and was doing talk shows and the publicity circuit and everything for these projects while he was going through chemo. You know, he was going to doctor's visits, getting treatments, and dude just came on with a brave face every day. And if you didn't know, you didn't know. And I'd only even heard a rumor because one guy I know who was in the comic industry had a loose connection to him and was kind of curious if there was a health issue. So, I mean, but you saw him and you didn't really think much of it. You know, one of the bigger issues is just that he was basically the face for the most important moment in black nerd culture, or blurreds, as you will. And I don't think people understand how important that is. You know, I remember when I saw the first stills and previews for Black Panther, and my immediate thought was just, it's not even going to matter that this is an all-black cast. This movie is going to be huge. And I remember having that discussion with someone and they didn't understand. And I had to explain to them that this is the first time that you are putting a black superhero top-level character with a full big budget production where the characters and the elements of the story are important to the overarching plan, universe, storyline. And it's not about the character being black. Like, it's not about this thing that only black people can relate to. It's just showing some elements of black culture and having them be part of a story and normalizing it. And that was huge. And this weekend, you know, and we'll talk about the event later, but with the backsplash, you know, I opened up talking to people about, put yourself, if you assume, okay, if you're just generic white dude that read comics growing up, imagine how many times you read a story or, hell, Lord of the Rings, anything, right? That's just predominantly white. And you put yourself in the mindset or in the position of every one of those characters at some point. The two of us never had that opportunity. You know, we read Spider-Man from the outside looking in.
Yeah.
Or Superman from the outside looking in. And several of the things that happened in our lives were not reflected in many of those stories. And I don't even necessarily fault the writers and whatever of those stories. It's just they didn't have those lived experiences. So they weren't there.
And, you know, the Justice League really tried, but especially when they're still doing Super Friends, the industry wasn't at the point yet where it could even really handle diversity. So they would just randomly add characters. Like, you remember El Dorado, whose really only distinctive characteristic was that he was Latin. That was it.
Yeah.
And the only two, I think, words he ever said in Spanish were like, Arriba. It was almost like Speedy Gonzalez. You know, it was obvious that nobody of color probably had really been consulted.
Oh, for sure. And I think that's what makes his death so hard for so many in the black community. Is that even though it's just a celebrity, we effectively lost the face of our biggest moment in that space. You know, isn't it like, I think Black Panther's like, what, the third largest grossing Marvel movie or something?
I believe so. I know it's up there.
Yeah, it's huge.
Right? I mean, it took, you know, the Infinity War where half of the population gets snapped to beat it.
Yeah. And I don't even think people understand. Like, there were moments where you heard kids in the theater when he got snapped out, like, freak out.
Yeah.
You know, when they saw him come back in Infinity War, spoilers, by the way, they were like super excited. Like, I saw kids that immediately were like, I want to be Black Panther for Halloween.
Yep. So many.
And not even just black kids. Like, really? That's what made it so big, that we finally had representation that everybody wanted to participate in. And it was such a big deal. Like, when you saw the people going to the movies and they were in full regalia and, you know, they dress themselves up like the different warriors and stuff from the movie, like, it, that was amazing.
Yeah, because it wasn't just Black Panther. They did such a great job with every character in that movie, really. Shuri is great. The Dora Milaje are great. I mean, it was incredible.
And it's one of those things where I think people don't understand that. They're looking at it as, well, he's just a dude. And I said, he may be just a dude, but everything he was part of and represented that mattered to Black geek culture is kind of like he was the face. And that's the thing. It's not even just him. It's everything that came with that effort.
And we saw so many people, you know, like Black and white, feel this way when Christopher Reeve died. Because I know for people of our generation, he was Superman.
That's true. I forgot about that one. Yeah, people did feel that way. You're right. And I think we're in a situation, too, where now it's like, okay, where do we go with the franchise from here? You know, it's Shuri still there. And they did do a stint in the comics where Shuri did take up the mantle of Black Panther for a bit.
Yeah, that's my vote. Not that they're asking me, but if they were to ask me, that would be my vote.
Yeah, so that's definitely a thing that can be done. You know, maybe somebody else steps up to be Black Panther. Who knows? However they want to write it. But it's definitely a touching moment. And one of the few times, like I said, that a celebrity death felt like it mattered to me.
I hadn't really cried yet when I saw the picture of him and Kobe from, I think it may have been from the Black Panther opening. I just, because again, those two people that, like you said, younger than us, you just, every time I look at them, I feel like neither of them should be gone. It just.
Yeah. And what's wild is both of them seem like they passed where they were both very happy at points in their lives.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it even harder. You know, you didn't see this, or you saw all these positive stories and all these efforts they were doing. And hell, even Kobe, he was like on his way to a kid's basketball game because he coaches some kids. And like, he was working on an animation project. And, you know, like, it's just hard when you see that happen.
Because you see so many athletes that can't figure out that next phase of their life. And Kobe was crushing it.
Yeah, he'd won an Oscar or whatever.
I mean, who does that? Kobe, that too.
So yeah, just one of those things. I think I just wanted to take a moment to put that in perspective. So people understood, like, it's not even just Bozeman's death of him as a person. It's just you lost the face of the thing that is one of the most important things to probably happen to Black geek culture.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, he was also Thurgood Marshall and Jackie Robinson, James Brown, and again, crushed it in every one of those movies.
Yeah, that was also crazy, too, that he passed the day after, like, Jackie Robinson Day.
Yeah.
Like, that was also a weird coincidence. But, all right, let's get into something a little more positive, Brian. Why don't we tell everybody what you learned last week?
Well, apparently there's a hybrid animal called a geep. And a geep is a hybrid of a goat and a sheep. And if you look up the baby geep photo, it'll probably come up first thing you see on Google. It is the cutest animal ever.
Hold on a second. I am literally going to go Google geep right now. That is the funniest looking. Like, it's like a weird little goat that's not a goat.
Yeah. I didn't know that two animals could, you know, throw down, but they can.
Okay. All right. I mean, see, I'm an animal household and I live with an animal person. So, like, I'm surprised I hadn't heard of a geep, but hey.
I was going to say, did you know? Because you were, you know, the most, other than my kids who give me all the animal facts, you were my expert. So, you didn't know about the geeps either?
I did not. That is a funny looking little animal. So now I know there are geeps in the world. Yeah. Well, my fact is not nearly as interesting as a geep. But I found out last week that I said I found out. I kind of knew, but the numbers bared out over time that the number 2 country for my viewership on YouTube is actually from Germany. Which doesn't make a lot of sense, but even more interesting is I don't get to another predominantly English-speaking country until number 5, which happens to be Canada. So I was really surprised by that. But I have had some Germans reach out, you know, and they mentioned like the way I speak and closed captioning, being able to capture my voice better, you know, has helped them out as far as watching the show because, you know, they have English as a second or third language. So, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense. Could also be like the time of day I'm putting stuff up or whatever because it works for their country. But I just thought that was really interesting because I think if somebody would have quizzed me just right off the bat and say, like, okay, name the top 5 countries where your views probably come from, I probably would have started with like 4 English-speaking countries and 1 non-English-speaking country, probably. But nope, not the case at all.
Tish and I are doing really well in Nigeria because of our ancestry videos.
That makes sense. So, like, yeah, it's stuff like that. You know, we talk sometimes about how to be successful, things you have to overcome. You know, but sometimes it's just paying attention to your analytics. Yeah. You know, I think I've mentioned before, these sites give you so much information. And it's up to you to take that information and do something with it. Like, if you know, in this case, you know, a large percentage of your user base comes from a certain country. If you can throw a bone or find something that those countries are interested in about things that you do or in your country, and you can work those in periodically, that's probably going to help your viewership and your numbers. You know, just like I said before, numbers don't lie. If you got good systems, the numbers are what they are. It's up to you to figure out what to do with them. But let's talk about some gaming stuff, man. There's a lot of interesting news. So let's start with something more in your wheelhouse with the Madden community. They got a little upset last week, and there was a hashtag started that was NFL drop EA. So why don't you tell us what all that was about?
There's the hashtag, and also apparently Madden 21 has the lowest user Metacritic score in the database's history. Its user score is currently at 0.04. That is out of 100.
Damn.
And it's just a culmination of a lot of things that have been going on with this game for a long time. Like franchise mode is almost non-existent. There are a lot of glitches. I was playing the other day and the line, all the art, all the lines, logos, everything on the field just vanished and was gone for the entire game. And those are just some of the glitches that come to mind off the top of my head. If you Google ball physics, you'll see all kinds of crazy balls bouncing off of people's heads and bouncing all sorts of ways they should not in real life. And none of these are new issues. These are things that have been building over, I would say, about 4 or 5 years easily at this point. And people are very, very tired of it. They want the NFL to completely drop the deal. Unfortunately, the NFL just renewed for 5 years last year, so I don't think there's an out clause, but people are upset.
And here's the thing from my perspective, because I also played Madden for several years. Like, my deal is I don't have a problem with minimal upgrades, but it's when it feels like so little effort got put in that would bother me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when you're talking about like ball physics, just, you know, a pile of players standing around while the ball bounces off everybody's head and nobody can grab it, right? You know, where somebody zoomed in on one part of a stadium and you can still see a Madden 19 banner.
Yep.
You know, not even Madden 20 that they reused from last year. They recycled something from the year before and didn't even clean it up. You know, it's stuff like that. Or seeing a player just get into the stumbling animation after catch and literally just stumble in circles. Like, just stay in the stumbling animation for like 20 seconds, right? Not going anywhere. It's those types of things that I think people get frustrated with, especially when you're spending, depending on what country you're in, you know, $60 to $80 or something buying this new copy. Yeah. When in reality, I would be fine if they just said, you know what? COVID was a problem. We didn't get to put the final touches on the games we want to. We don't feel like putting out a poor product. We're just going to do roster updates, maintenance to these 2 or 3 parts of the game or whatever. And you can get all that for like a $20 download. I'd have been fine with that.
And they'd get people that hadn't played Madden in 15 years if they did something like that.
Yeah. I think that'd be great. Just say,
everybody would try it for $20.
Yeah. And the truth is, you can just justify it as like, look, we didn't put near as many employee hours into this. We didn't put as much research into it, you know, except for probably the scouts that have to do the Madden scores on the players or whatever, the ratings. But other than that, just say like, yeah, here's why we'll put a whole new $60 version out next year. And we'll just put the extra time that would have went into this into that one. And you just get a badass new version next year. But to literally, like, honestly, and I'm fine. Like, I get that there's going to be glitches and things happening or whatever. But I get it why people are mad with this one. Like, it is at an all-time high. Like, exponentially worse than any previous version.
Yeah.
I mean, how does that affect you, like, in the streaming community when you want to stream a game like this?
I mean, there's... if you look at it, because, you know, Madden streams pretty much every day, and I happen to see the comments today, and I mean, there's some positive comments. Probably, I would even say the majority are probably asking about this, but so much of it is, hey, when are you going to fix this? When is this glitch going to go away? And it's depressing, really.
Yeah, that can't be good for the brand. And like I said, I get it. Like, you're not going to have major upgrades every year.
Because it's sports. For the most part, the rules of football don't change from year to year.
Yeah. But even if it was like, okay, we're going to work on some better catching animations, right? We're going to do some cool stuff with the audience. Maybe see people doing the wave or something or whatever, right? Just little effects and things we're gonna upgrade so it's a better user experience.
Career.
And then maybe,
you know,
update one of those like career modes or something.
Because their career mode is by far the worst of any sports game out there right now. This year, you basically can fumble on every play. You'll still get to go to one of the best colleges in the country.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They try to tell you that, oh, you know, your decisions or your plays. No, it's all scripted. You can be the worst player on the field. You'll still get to go to a 1A college. Then you'll go to that 1A college into the NFL draft. It may affect your position, but imagine being a player that fumbles or drops the ball on every play. You don't go to the NFL. You don't. Nobody picks you up. You don't get invited, you know, to walk on any place.
Dude, that's so weird. Because, like, the first year they did it, I guess that was, like, 4 years ago or whatever. But the first year they did it, it was really good.
A few years ago, it was incredible when they first started doing, I think it was called long shot mode. It was really
good. Yeah.
It looked like it had turned a corner, and then it just went consistently. I will say second year of long shot was awful, but the concept was still good.
Man, that's rough. Because, like I said, they had a great idea. They even had name actors come in to do voice acting for stuff. Huh.
They looked like they were turning a corner, and then they just went completely. A lot of people are blaming the Ultimate Team mode because no matter how bad the core game is, Ultimate Team is like crack. I'll tell you, I'm a sucker. I bought the almost $100 edition that gives you more cards for your Ultimate Team. Because spoiler alert, I love to collect cards. So people feel like that's what's driving it, is that they're going to make X amount of money regardless of how bad the rest of the game is. So they don't care anymore. And that's probably correct.
There's probably something to that. But yeah, for anybody who wants to get more information or you want to see all the crazy things we're talking about as far as animations and whatnot, Twitter is loaded. If you check out NFL drop EA, that hashtag. And yeah, there's a lot of interesting things there if you want to see how bad it really is. I did mention it already, but last week we had the Backsplash event, and it was pretty cool. It was won by Greg Orange, who was on our, I believe, episode 2 of our show. Really, really fun dude. Good interview. Go check it out if you haven't. And the event went pretty well. I did commentary with Luis Alfonso. It was his first time doing commentary for an event like that.
Oh, wow.
And
even more impressive then, because y'all were great.
Yeah, it worked out pretty well. And I felt like I was doing a little bit behind the scenes. I felt like I sort of alpha dogged it a little bit. But just to make sure we were going in and out of like commercials cleanly and, you know, knew what we were going to cover, and it worked out well. So credit to everybody involved. We had moderate viewership, but there was a lot of people we saw that were hosting it on their different Twitch streams. I saw that Wizards of the Coast, the Magic the Gathering Twitch channel had hosted it. They had shared some stuff on Twitter about it. So lots of people were involved. There were a ton of sponsors for it, which are great, including the Red Bull Untapped series. They also supported it.
Okay.
So yeah, overall, it was pretty well received. I got a handful of messages like I expected of like, aren't we trying to be inclusive? Why are we trying to do blah, blah? Like, okay, yeah, all right, man. You know, again, the event was because people kept saying, I don't know Black content creators and players or whatever to follow. I was like, cool, let's put them all in one place. And now here's a reference you can just send people to.
Yeah.
So by the way, if you want to get the VOD or you want to watch it, you can go to JD Greenidge, his channel. He's been on the show as well, I think like 3 episodes ago. And it's all there. It's also linked. So if you want to see the webpage for it that has all the stuff on it, you can see that there. The other thing we want to encourage people to do as well is when people say that or people aren't sure, direct them to that VOD. So they can watch it, have links, have references to everybody, you know, and understand like, hey, here's people that you can go watch or listen to or follow them on Twitch or whatever it is to help raise the profile of those people. Because I get it, right? If you just don't have people of color in your social circles, you're just not going to know, right? If the people you know don't know, well, how are you going to find out? Well, here's the thing now that we can reference that has, if you consider the 2 commentators, the couple of people behind the scenes, the 8 players, and the creator, JD, you know, his brainchild, you know, that's 13 people right there that you can just give them in one resource.
If you want to know more, all of them, and know some more people.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Also, another thing that got announced at his event at the end, he wants to do a series of 4 events, and this was the first of the 4. He wants to do an all-women event. He wants to do an LGBT event. And then he also wants to do just an open event for anyone to participate. And then take the top couple of players from each of those and do a final tournament in the summer next year, I believe. So I think the way it sounds like he wants to do it is about every 2 to 3 months, have one of these events, and then have it just build up to effectively a championship event. So give something for everybody in the community. Hopefully everyone slowly gets representation through these types of efforts. And as sponsors come on board and you get more bigger names that contribute to it, we can do bigger productions, bigger events, and hopefully get more people interested, more eyes on it. So more news. I mean, I'm trying to like race through this. We're already running a little long, but Magico Mobile Arena, it's coming. They had day 9 on stream showing what looked to be at least a playable version on his phone. And it looked like Arena, surprisingly. I don't know how that's going to work when you get a board state that has like 25 tokens and they have different amounts of bonuses on them or whatever, and your opponent has 15 things, but hey, they're at least a step closer. They're saying it's really soon. Apparently they're getting down to the final version, so maybe we'll see it here in the next couple of months before we get to the end of the year. But that's exciting for people that, you know, Arena on mobile is actually almost a thing.
It's getting there.
Yeah. And I don't know. Like, here's the thing. If you have Arena on your phone or tablet, would you play more often?
I would say yes, certainly while I'm, you know, at the doctor's office or just any place where I'm going to have to sit there and wait for way longer than I want to, I would absolutely pull that out.
Yeah, see, I think I'm in the same boat. I don't know if it would be something I'm just like actively going to do from my phone while I'm like sitting on my couch. But if I'm like, you know, in future world when we're not in the time of COVID, I would use it maybe if I'm sitting in the airport or, you know, waiting for somebody in the hotel lobby. I could knock out a game in like 15 minutes or something. I would probably do that. So if it's on mobile, at least the convenience would be nice to have the option if we wanted it. The one thing I'd be concerned about from Wizards perspective is they do have partnerships with companies like Netmarble and some of these others that are doing these different Magic themed games, you know, whether it's a match three or whatever it is. Yeah. You know, what the other recent Clash Royale one they did, or that style. My question is, how does that affect those working relationships? And I'm sure we won't know. I'm sure this is all behind the scenes. But if Arena comes to mobile, then the average Magic player is probably very heavily going to play Magic. So then I'm assuming you only get players for those other products that like those style of games, but also like the Magic theme. But I don't know.
Yeah, because I played the match three puzzler. You know, it's not something I play every day, but I have played it before. And if I'm going to play a match three, yeah, I want one that's got a theme. Like I also play the WWE one, you know, just because it's a theme I like. So. Yeah. I think if you want to play Arena, you're going to go play Arena. If you want to go play, you know, a Magic themed or whatever theme Candy Crush, you go play that.
That makes sense.
And there's definitely I'm in the mood for Candy Crush. You know?
It's definitely exciting for a lot of players. You know, I saw people really talking positive about it. Even just seeing the shots on the stream were exciting for people. I think it's going to create an interesting bit of development as far as both how Arena is built and how cards are being created, because they're going to have to make sense on mobile now. You know, I think that's a thing many players don't consider, is that as we add these other elements to be able to play the game of Magic, we do have to think about how they're going to appear in those settings. So I'm sure we're going to start seeing more of that. Probably we won't see a lot of that come to fruition for probably about another 9 months or so. But if you see a thing that's like, this could be done this way, but it's like, it's written this way specifically so it doesn't create too many tokens or something, you know.
They said one of the reasons, you know, they dealt with Cauldron Familiar is because it's so many triggers that it's just super boring in a format, in a digital format, basically.
Yeah. But we'll see. Like I said, it's exciting news for people. So if you've been waiting on it, it's coming. It's almost here. Then other news that also was shared. Tons of Zendikar stuff. I don't know if there's a ton to go into, but I do. Well, there is a ton to go into, but there's not a ton we're going to cover on it. We'll do a later episode that's about specific cards from Zendikar. But I want to talk about a couple of the promo parts of the release. The first is that the buy box card is no longer unique. And that's something they tried out for, I guess, about the past 2 years-ish. And they've decided to settle on the fact of, you know what? It's just going to be a card from the set. It's just getting unique art, and it'll be foil or whatever. It just comes on the top of the box. You just get that. When you buy a box, you get one of these. Done. And I'm okay with that. You know, I think... And even when, and this came up when I was there, it was one of the things they were first starting to do. And I remember speaking with a couple of people from R&D about it. And it was an interesting experiment, you know, just to make a completely unique thing that people will get for buying a booster box. And I didn't mind it knowing that, and I can say this freely because Rosewater had mentioned it on his blog at some point, but there were always going to be more of that card printed, whatever that card was going to be, than any other mythic in the set. So quantity wasn't really an issue. There'd be enough in circulation out into the world. I just think the problem was you get in a weird space of how do you make it appealing? Because you've seen stuff like Nexus of Fate that was way powerful, and you don't want that. But then they also had the big, whatever it is, like the, what is it, like a 13-13 worm or something that had Convoke. And it's like, nobody's ever going to play that card. So.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah, but it's kind of a hard situation because it's like, how do you design cards that are completely unique so they're not overpowerful and dominant, but also not super boring that nobody cares? Right? Otherwise, you create this unique thing that has almost no value because nobody gives a damn about it. But you also don't want to create the unique thing that everybody wants to go spend $25, $35 on. So I think this is a good middle ground for them of just saying, you know what? we're still just going to make it available. It's just going to be completely unique and different and cool bonus for buying a box. Now, that's not all you're going to get if you buy a box from Zendikar, at least Zendikar Rising.
But wait, there's more.
Yes, definitely more. Lots more. But in this case, they're bringing back Expeditions. So for those of you who don't know, maybe you're new to Magic, each time we've gone to Zendikar, there has been a land-based... Well, there's been just a treasure gimmick. The first time they took old Magic cards, valuable cards, and inserted them throughout the print runs of Zendikar. So you could open Lotuses, Moxes, whatever, right? That's a thing that was possible. Then I guess about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when we did, we came back, did the return to Zendikar effectively for our second run there. We ended up having these expeditions and they were randomly inserted. They were like one every three or four boxes or something. I can't remember what the odds were, but basically one per so many boxes. You got a card from the subset that were these generally better and powerful lands, but cool, unique art, foil, all that. This time, they're making them available, but you're just going to get one with every box. The kicker is, though, that the one you're getting with your booster boxes as a box topper are non-foil, though they're supposedly given some type of, like, they made it sound like a glossy embossed coating of some kind. My guess is it'll probably be around the edges on the hedron, filigree, whatever you want to call that. But they're going to be non-foil. And then if you buy the collector's boosters, you can get foil ones in the booster packs at a rate of about one per every six packs. So you should be getting at least two in your collector's booster box. And you'll also get, I believe you get two box toppers for your collector's booster. And then any other booster box, whether it's a draft box, a set booster box, whatever, you'll still get one with that. And it's cool because this list of cards is pretty big. I mean, there's some pretty valuable ones in there. I mean, you could very well be buying a box and getting an extra, like, $30 card, $50 card, you know, and that's awesome. The other thing, too, to point out is I know people are like, oh, my God, is this the reprint we're getting for fetch lands? This is so terrible. Well, first off, they're putting a lot more fetch lands out into the world this way. So that's the first thing. But the other is... the fact that they did announce that next year there will be a Modern Horizons 2 and the enemy fetch lands will be printed in that set as well. So they've already announced for sure it's a thing that they're doing. So yeah, just lots of stuff with Zendikar. I will say so far, I don't know, have you looked at the previews yet for this?
I have. It's some crazy, crazy stuff looks like, which we, I guess is to be expected because...
Yeah, we'll save it for another time. I won't get into it here because we could just go down a rabbit hole there. But there is some really interesting and fun stuff that's probably going to change how we think about Magic and deck build or whatever. Matter of fact, we made, if it's not next week, it'll probably be the following week. But one of the next 2 weeks, we'll actually do an episode. And it's probably going to be a nearly all Zendikar episode, honestly, because we're going to have lots to cover.
I don't see anything yet that's all like, oh my God, Banhammer. So that's a bonus. Hopefully we don't see that.
Yeah, but we still got, what, 8 more days of previews? So hold on to that. Okay, we also found out other news. We got the, I guess, set names and themes for the set for next year. To make it simple, we basically have Magic Goes to Asgard in the snow. So, I mean, Kaldheim, I think, is what they called it.
Yeah.
And then there's... Harry Potter Wizard School Magic style that we're getting after that. And then after that, the one that we kind of knew was coming, it was a matter of when, not if, the D&D Magic set is coming. And that's going to replace the core set next year. So that in and of itself is pretty exciting. And then we followed up where we're going to go back to Innistrad. And they showed it as Innistrad Werewolves and Innistrad Vampires.
Okay.
Which is interesting because we don't know if that means there's two back-to-back sets in Innistrad, or if, like, because people were upset, like, how are you going to give us two sets? And but here's the thing, we don't know what this means yet, right? Like, this could be two different sets, maybe two smaller sets that come 6 or 8 weeks apart. It could be sets sold in, like, two types of boosters. So if you want more werewolves or more vampires, maybe that's a thing.
I would all be all about that, by the way.
Yeah, or who knows, right? Like, there's a bunch of things it could be. So, like, I'm not going to speculate on it till we get more details. But anyway, that's the stuff we got. The thing I want to point out, really, of that announcement, I think the most interesting one is the D&D MTG set, right? We kind of knew for years.
Yeah.
Once you saw that, like, Wizards of the Coast owns D&D, it's like, okay, a matter of time before we get these products together. Now, granted, here we are 20 years later, and it's just now happening. But starting about four years ago, I think, we did start seeing the D&D magic-themed adventures. You know, we saw some for Ixalan, we saw some for Ravnica, right? So at that point, the door was already open, and we knew it was going to eventually happen. And the thing that gets me is why it hadn't happened sooner, I don't know, because you've already done the world-building for all the D&D stuff. You already have the artwork, you know what the people look like, the monsters. You already have stats effectively for all of them. You just have to convert those to magic stats so they make sense, or the abilities. But you even have, like, special magic spells. You've got magic items, which could just be equipment or artifacts or whatever. Like, all of it's done. You know what I mean? You just have to just make it make sense in magic language.
And it kind of already is starting in Zendikar, because we're seeing cards that say, hey, if you got this in your part, several cards already reference your party.
Yeah, and I like that too, right? Because we're going to get that in Zendikar. May not matter in the next two sets. You might get a couple of cards that reference it, but you probably won't get many. But when we go to the D&D set, pretty sure you're going to see it all over again, yeah. Which is going to be pretty awesome. So yeah, it's an interesting thing. It'll be fun to see what the crossover cards are. You know, do you get a Drizzt Do'Urden as a elf lord or something? You know, do you get a Strahd as a weird villain or something? Like, I don't know where they want to place the story, because there's tons of D&D worlds as well. So there's a lot of things that can be done with it. But I think people are looking forward to it. The one thing I will say from the announcements, there were already some people concerned that pretty much any time you do stuff with, like, Vikings or Norse, whatever, you get a lot of the, we'll call them neo-Nazi type people that come around and peek their heads into stuff.
Yeah.
And we've already seen some corners where they try to get involved in different cultural things where they can as recruitment. I mean, there's a whole, honestly, there's even a whole thing on Netflix, if you go look it up, where, like, they basically took over the whole My Little Pony brony culture.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and they started, like, using that to recruit. Yeah, there's a whole thing about it. And there's already been, like, rumblings that they have tried it in Magic a couple of times. So there's already people a little bit concerned and saying, like, hey, if you see this popping up, like, let people know and let's just push this crap out before it even gets started. Because this is not something you want to go that way.
No.
We definitely don't. So we want to avoid that. So keep your eyes and ears open. If you see stuff that looks funny, call people out on it. Keep it from going down that road. Because this next year looks like it has so much potential from a thematic standpoint. And a matter of fact, you know what I hope? I hope they do some version of this, like, Snow World, Viking World, whatever. And there's, like, at least 30% people of color in that artwork and in that set. Just to even stop it from happening. Now, there may not be, because, again, this was in development way before we got to the recent enlightenment of society. Hey, just being real, I mean, yeah. This set's probably been done already for the better part of, like, I don't know, 9 months. So what do you do at that point?
Yeah.
But maybe. We'll see. One can hope. There was also another small tidbit that got snuck in there that I saw. I didn't see it immediately. I had to go back and review some things, because I try to do my research. But Magic Story is coming back, supposedly.
And people are hyped.
Yeah, that's a big thing for people. I mean, there's a big part of the community that likes the lore, likes the backstory on the look and, you know, the history. So that's kind of a cool thing that it's coming back. I would assume, and you know what they say when you assume, But I would like to think that this is happening because Wizards is at least in their minds, whether it's accurate or not, we'll find out, believes they are in a better place to write the stories now. You know, from a way that makes sense, from a way that fans will react to, and, you know, the stories are compelling. Because, you know, they, for the last one, when the, that before they cut it off, they got ripped pretty hard.
Yeah.
And rightfully so. I mean, I we've said it on the show before. I'm fine taking shots at companies or people or whatever, as long as we're also going to praise them when they do right. But the last bit of story was pretty bad. It was pretty bad.
And we see this happen, you know, all throughout the industry when you try, like, comic book universes do this, you know, where you switch writers 15 different times because you have to, you know, because everybody can't write all of, you can't have one person write all of Shandro or Nyssa or whoever's adventures. And different writers have different changes in tone, and sometimes these changes are the complete opposite of where the previous writer wanted to go.
Oh, dude, like, if you want to talk about that, like, look at DC Universe. And when they're doing anything involving their, like, 52 universes, like 52, Countdown, like, any of that, those are just a mess. Like, always a mess. I don't know how they even, why they even keep doing it and who signs off on it, because they all seem terrible.
Keep doing it to sell comic books.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong.
When they did Crisis initially, it was because they were trying to clean, they realized 52 universes was too much to handle. They were trying to prevent what now happens every summer. Now they just do it to sell more books.
Yeah, that's true. But if you're into Magic Story, keep your eyes and ears open. It's coming back. So hopefully we'll get that pretty soon for you.
I love the whole three-way dance with Nahiri, Avacyn, Soren. That's good stuff.
Yeah, that's true. Though it is kind of funny when you think about the fact that they hated each other so much, ran to another plane, and then she stuck them in a slab of concrete or whatever. Like, how much do you have to hate somebody that you're going to literally chase them across the universe just to, like, spite them or whatever, like, spite check them.
They have hate, right? From hell's heart, I stab at thee.
Yeah, that's crazy. But another announcement.
I'm sorry,
we have another announcement I want to throw in there, where we've got the Hunter Burton Memorial Open that we talked about before. Obviously, this year, the events did not happen, even after we rescheduled it due to the pandemic. There was a group that was going to run a big Dragon Ball Z tournament there in addition to the Magic stuff. And they're going to be hosting an event on Friday evening, actually. I believe it starts at, for them, 4 p.m. Central Time. But the HBMO wanted to tie in a bunch of related material to that event. So what they're going to be doing is we're going to, I guess I'm going to start the day at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. I'm going to do a stream where I'm going to be just talking. Well, first, I'll probably premiere my preview video that Zendikar has by way of Wizards of the Coast. So if you want to check that out. And then we'll go into probably just talking about general gaming stuff, you know, how people can relax, how you can de-stress. You know, the whole thing is about suicide prevention and awareness. So we're going to be talking tips and tactics. Probably play a game I saw, a Jackbox game called Bidiots, which I've heard amazing things about, and I watched a couple of videos on. It looks like fun. So we're going to play that for a little bit. We'll probably answer a few more questions, and then we will roll into a Zoom chat with myself, Brian Augustine, who goes by Matumbo on YouTube, does a lot of good historic content, if you want to check his stuff out. One of the producers for the HBMO, Aaron Giddings, who was on the show, you know, one of the big leaders there with the whole thing, and just talk about kind of the history, let people ask some questions, and then talk about the upcoming announcements for the HBMO as well. And then there will be, I believe then Matumbo is going to go into doing a stream for like an hour and a half, 2 hours. And then we're going to have the kickoff of the Dragon Ball Z event. So it's basically going to be one big day on Twitch for them, literally all day. But feel free to check them out. They have a Twitch channel. It's just Hunter Burton Memorial Open. You can find them on Twitch. You can also find them not really on YouTube. I think they have a YouTube page, but they were just putting event footage there. But they're mostly on Twitch, and they do have a website if you want to get more details. Quick thing, we did have a question come up from the Discord from Dino. And Dino asks, as a content creator, how do you view all the previews? It seems like potentially a boon in that there's a lot to talk about, but could also see that it's a lot to keep track of, and you may feel pressure to talk about a lot of those things, even when you don't necessarily know much about it yet. In particular, it'd be interesting to hear your takes on Zendikar previews or the lineup for next year. Well, guess what? We already covered the lineup for next year. But I mean, here's the thing. Like, when people throw out stuff and say, like, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? What do you think about this? And the issue there is people want as much knowledge as possible so they can make probably buying decisions or deck building decisions, which I totally understand. But for me personally, I tell people that if you follow me on stream or whatever people ask, there are a few cards that I feel strongly about I will tell you about. You know, like we were talking about the other day, like Elder Gargaroth, everybody was like, eh, but it doesn't do anything when it comes into play and it dies to all the removal. And I'm like, nope, this card's good. Like, I'm on record. You can go to my YouTube channel on the preview day where they talked about it. I even did a goofy thing where I like changed the music and made a thing about it being my new bae and all this stuff, right? But it's a card now. You're seeing it in multiple copies in a lot of decks, right? And I told people, don't listen to the hype. The card's good. Get you a couple copies. Same, and we've talked about it before. Same thing with like Embercleave or whatever, right? But there's very few I do that with. When people ask me, I'm like, hey.
Daquan about these by now. Who's like, nah, Daquan's wrong. Who's doing
it? But here's the thing. There are many things I won't give a clear answer on because I don't have one. So I don't feel pressured to. I just feel bad that people come to me expecting there's going to be a clear answer. And I'm not going to say something to you that's going to cause you to gamble with bad information. Now, I might do it myself, and I might tell you, like, hey, here's situations where I think this card could be used, or a possibility that if something else gets previewed in this set, this could make this more valuable. And so, like, I'm going to go ahead and pre-order a few things. Like, you can follow my lead or not, but I'm not telling you this is a good thing to do. I'm just doing this for myself. And some people don't like that. They want you to give a hard answer, you know, and I'm like, sometimes I don't have it. And like in this case, like we're not going to talk about every preview card as it comes up. You can go, honestly, you can go to my YouTube channel. I'm doing that daily. And even then, I'm not talking about every card. I'm just doing like the highlights of every day in little like 10 to 15 minute videos. You can check that out. I'll have a whole series by the time it's done. But that's probably the closest I'm going to come. And then at the end of it, we do our show where we each talk about five or six cards and, you know, do our thing. And we'll do that probably next week like we normally do. So there's not a lot of pressure there for us. I think people, and it's tough, right? Because I get that people want to hear their favorite personalities talk about the latest thing. And that makes complete sense. But if you just want to know like our general feelings, I'm like, hey, this looks like fun, or I like this thing, or I like what it's trying to do, or whatever. Cool. But that's not going to be the deep-seated analysis that you're looking for. You know, even on my videos, I'm like, you know, my daily preview reviews. I'm basically doing like, hey, this card looks pretty strong. Here's two or three different situations I think it could be used in or whatever. Or here's what I'm kind of thinking, depending on what else comes out in this set. Or maybe this card looks like it's planting the seeds for some other stuff that are going to be previewed. And like, that's about it. Like, I'm not doing anything. Now, once we get to the end of this week, say we get to Saturday or Sunday, and we've seen at least, I don't know, 200 cards at that point in the set or something. Okay, now we can start piecing together some things. I've seen enough of the set that I can make a deck list or two, and then we can start having those real conversations. But on the first 3 to 5 days, it's pretty hard to do. I mean, I know some people will do it, and some people are obligated because they write articles. Their whole brand is being that predictable, you know, see if they can make a prediction on the format or whatever, and that's what they're known for. Fortunately, that is not how I have branded myself. So I don't have to worry about it. Hey, just being honest, like I never wanted to be that person. I did not put myself in that situation. So I am glad I don't have to be one of those people, because We talked about it before, where people already come to my YouTube channel when I'm putting decks up literally every day, and people are just, oh, I just smashed, you know, all of Platinum with your deck. Thanks so much. And the next person's like, this deck is crap. I can't win a single game with it. Like, well, I don't know what to tell you to do with that. Like, it's literally just there. I'm not telling anybody to play any deck I put up. Like, I literally don't tell you. Like, I've actually told people not to play some decks I put up. Rogue. But I haven't actually told people. What's up?
Rogues. Cough, cough.
Well, yeah, Rogues definitely falls in that category, right? I have told people, don't play this deck. But rarely have I said, like, this is the deck you need to play if you want to crush Ladder in Standard or whatever, right? That's just not a thing. Now, I can tell you sometimes some matchups that may be good or bad, or you can watch my games and, you know, deduce whatever information you want from those. But it's not a thing I pride myself on. That is not it. My thing is giving you concepts, giving you ideas, talking you through plays, helping you become a better player with the maximum amount of information, not being here to tell you what to do. That's not my thing. And there's some people who are. They're like, this is the deck you play. If you're not, you're stupid. This is the best deck in the format. Go play it, right? And that's fine. And you may have success listening to those people, and that is great. But that's just not something I do. So for something like Zendikar previews, I don't feel pressured at all. Now, I will ask you this, Brian, now that you are kind of an emerging content person now on YouTube, how are you treating the Zendikar previews?
I'm like you. I'm not going to be the person going to tell you, you know, hey, this is what you have to absolutely play to crush the format, because that's, I freely tell people, I am not a pro player. I just, mine is more of like, hey, this is cool. Like, for example, the D&D party stuff. Yeah, I'm going to try to put that together in Zendikar, and it's going to be horrible. But that's the kind of thing I like to play, is just goofy things like that. So I take it from more of the standpoint of like, hey, this is flavor I like, or this is a crazy combo that I like to try that may not work, but I'm going to have fun anyway.
Yeah, and that's a totally valid way to play Magic, you know, and I think it draws a different audience and a different crowd. And that's one thing I try to just keep impressing on people is, like, because I'll have people just post a random question like, what do you think about this? And I'm like, okay, well, what specifically do you want to know about it? You know, like, I can't remember what it was, but somebody posted that today, actually. Like, what do you think about this color combination or whatever, or this style of deck? And I'm like, I don't know. What do you want to know about it? And I'm not saying that to be snarky, but it's like, I could literally write probably like 14 pages on, not 14, probably 4 pages on stuff about that. But like, you might only really want to know about 3 paragraphs I type in there. So help me out. Like, be specific. Like, just, you know, it's like when somebody says, hey, can you review my YouTube channel? I'm like, was there something particular you feel you're lacking, or what the problem is or whatever, that I can kind of help analyze? Otherwise, I'm just going to be breaking down a billion things and I don't even know what you have the ability to work on. You know, sort of feel the same way about Magic. If you tell me, ask me about a certain card or deck type or whatever, I'm like, cool, but like, what format do you play? Like, do you have the resources in Arena as far as wild cards or whatever? Or do you have a budget? You can go buy singles for paper Magic. Like, all those things matter for me to give you information to help you out. So if you bring specific things, we can probably have real conversations. But just in the abstract, it's pretty difficult sometimes. But that brings us toward the end of our episode. So you know what that means. It's dinner table talk time. And this is a conversation we've been kind of putting on the back burner a little bit, because there's been some other more pressing things that needed to be discussed. But I did find this one interesting, because I saw it come up a couple of times, and I didn't necessarily feel real heavy about it one way or the other, but I thought it still made for some interesting conversation. And it started with somebody asking if white people decide to use a meme or a GIF, however you want to call it, of a black person, is that the equivalent of digital blackface? Which honestly is something I never really thought much about, right? Like, it's, but the more I thought about it, it's like, if you are using, okay, here's my view. I will say this. If you're using something that is very historically questionable or overly stereotypically black, then there might be some stuff that gets called into question. But if you post up like the exhibit meme of just like, yo, dog, I heard you like cards with your cards, so here's a card with a card, right? Like, everybody saw exhibit on, you know, Pimp My Ride and everything. Like, that's not a thing, right? Like, that's not blackface of any kind. That's not going
to
bother me.
Or the meme with the guy pointing to his head when he's come to, you know, hey, you know, can't get banned from the tournament if you don't play in the tournament, that kind of stuff. No, I would.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that stuff doesn't bother me. Now, if somebody put up something, I don't know, that was just like borderline racist or something, and you want to respond with like an Aunt Jemima meme, that's probably a bad look. That's probably not something you want to do.
Or when I saw on Twitch where there was a black player on camera and people kept spamming, you know, the KFC emote, like, that's obviously racist. They're obviously because nobody was spamming KFC until the brother showed up on camera. That's obvious. They're making, you know, fried chicken jokes. That's
sure. And, you know, and here's the thing. Let me say this about the fried chicken meme, right? Like, there's a bunch of places that make money selling chicken, but it ain't all black people going in and buying the chicken. Chicken's just good. I think it was Dave Chappelle, like, hell, probably 20 years ago, that said it on stage that if you just don't like fried chicken and watermelon, well, something's just wrong with you. And I mean, he's kind of right.
Yeah. I did have a classmate in high school who didn't eat fried chicken, watermelon, and cornbread because he thought it was stereotypical. And of course, you know, his classmates, including me, are like, more for me, pass that cornbread over here because it's good.
Gosh damn. Who did, like, see, and that's rough when you're not doing it because you believe it's stereotypical. It's like, no, it's just good food. Enjoy it. You know? But anyway, back on point. Like, there are situations where I don't know if I would consider it digital blackface, but there are situations where it would just be disrespectful in some of the things that you're doing.
And as with any of these situations where you're talking about, you know, I guess an attempt at humor, which is what a meme generally is, an attempt at humor, context matters.
Oh, for sure. For sure. If it's a concern of yours, you know, because it may be for some people, especially right now where everybody's being culturally sensitive to a lot of things, I would probably stay away from using memes or images or GIFs or whatever of black leaders, you know, or people that are held in really high regard in the black community. The same way that, like, I wouldn't touch any, like, anything that's, like, referencing Jewish stuff or whatever,
yeah.
I probably won't ever post with that. Because it's just, it's not me, it's not my religion, it's not, you know, it's not a thing I'm gonna step into. I'm just, like, even if it's fitting, I might just try to find another picture or meme or whatever to use in that scenario. Because I don't want to step on somebody else's toes for something that is sacred toward them, you know?
And I'll give you an example of context mattering. I was in a group on a PlayStation playing with some of my friends, very diverse group. And one of my friends makes a joke about, like, oh, why do you think I like fried chicken? And they thought he was, you know, snapping on me. And then he says, no, I'm Filipino. That joke was targeting me. He's like, have you never seen it? And I realized, and while teaching it, I think it was number one Asian buffet. Like, yeah, the Filipino buffet has all the same stuff that the black buffet that I would go to has. It has fried chicken. It has, well, I never realized that until that moment.
Oh, yeah. Like, one of the best things, if you, like, man, if you're talking about pork products too, oh, man, the Filipinos will kill it for real. Like, just saying. But yeah, I don't think it's a case of digital blackface, though. I think more often than not, you're going to be okay, especially if it's a popularly known meme.
Yeah.
You know, There's a one with what's his name? The ex Lakers player that has like the question marks all over his head or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that one's one that everybody uses. That's fine. There's the, there's several out there with Ice Cube.
Yeah.
You know? So like, feel free to use those. I mean, there's so many, right? That's what I'm saying. I can't
worry about using Ice Cube because that may offend your Jewish friends. Because apparently, there's some crazy anti-Semitic stuff.
I don't know. No, no. That's Nick Cannon these days.
Ice Cube apparently has some bad ones too.
Oh, did he? Yeah. I didn't know this.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to go look that up.
Nick Cannon or in the doghouse right now.
But yeah, I think it's a situation, like you're saying, context matters. But really, if you're using things or people that are just popularly known or celebrities or memes that have been around forever, if anybody calls you on it, like, just have a real conversation with them and just be like, really, you know, here's what I was trying to do. Here's why I used it. You know, nothing meant by it. And you're probably going to have an okay conversation. Like I said, I would be more bothered, like, if you're using, like I said, if you responded to something with an Aunt Jemima meme, you know, or some old mammy type character, yeah, then I might be like, hey, why'd you choose that one?
Yeah, we gotta have a conversation.
Yeah, like there'd be some questions, you know, but most of the time, I don't think there's gonna be an issue. I mean, I don't, the same way, if I used any of these other ones, as long as it's not something that I'm aware of being, like I said, in super high regard or sacred or whatever for a particular people or culture, I don't think it would be an issue. Like, because like sometimes people will say like, hey, thanks for this information or whatever. And I'll respond with the Maui meme of just like doing the, you're welcome or whatever, right? From Moana. But like, I'm not Polynesian, but I don't think that's disrespectful toward the Polynesian culture. Moana was just a sweet ass movie,
yeah.
And it had a cool song that everybody knows, so it makes sense to use that, right? But I could see other cases where if there was just a like tribal Samoan or something or whatever, depending on the conversation, it may not make sense to use that. So I would just stay away from it, you know, that sort of thing. So yeah, just really think about what you're responding to and the context, and I think you're mostly safe. Do you have anything else you want to add to that?
No, I believe you nailed it, as usual.
Cool. Well then at this point, why don't you tell everybody how they can find you on social?
Okay, I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. Our family YouTube channel is Alan's Ever After.
And I can be found at Power Dragon, PowerDragn on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube mostly these days. You can find me on Twitch Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, 9 p.m. to midnight Pacific time, and on YouTube just about every day. And while there's previews going up for Zendikar, you can find a preview video every single day. And on Friday, I will have my own preview video going up at 9 a.m. Pacific time. But as usual, I want to ask everybody, wherever you are listening from, whenever you are listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Stay safe, wear your mask, wash your hands, stay away from other humans that are icky with the COVID, and let's get to a spot that we can start socializing and gaming comfortably again. If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us at our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate under patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at Color of MTG. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.